Welcome to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Last week, I watched the film Fruitvale Station. At the end, there was open weeping among the audience. Oscar Grant was no longer just a symbol for us. He was a man, senselessly killed, and we felt the grief of a suddenly fatherless girl and a mother left to answer the question, where's Daddy? It's been a week where we've been asking a lot of questions. In what moral or legal framework is it permissible for an adult to follow an unarmed teenager walking home, kill him, and call it self-defense? How do we direct rage and frustration at unequal justice in a productive manner? How many of us in the media and in our daily lives regularly engage in racial profiling? And have we abandoned people in certain neighborhoods to haphazard and relentless brutality? How do we talk to each other across these deep social, economic, and racial divides? Often we just don't. We can discount each other's humanity by using terms like thugs or racists or illegals or liberals or gun nuts or rioters. Then we don't have to listen anymore or try to understand. But one of the magical things about art is that it can help us transcend our differences. It can break down these invisible barriers, and it can take us places we might not otherwise ever go, like Fruitvale Station on New Year's Eve, and that's where the 22-year-old Oscar Grant was shot in the back as he lay prone on the platform. You can call us and share your reactions to the film and let us know what questions it brings up for you. I'll give out the number in just a minute. But first, I want to introduce the men I have in studio to talk about this. Chris Johnson is a professor of photography at the California College of the Arts. He's also the Media Wall Project Manager and Public Art Management Team Member for the Oakland Museum and the Port of Oakland. And he's one of the artists behind a video installation called Question Bridge Black Males, which was exhibited at the Oakland Museum of California last year, right? And it's now at the Exploratorium. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for bringing me.
Cheo Tayahimba Taylor is an award-winning journalist, screenwriter, producer, author, activist, and founder of Forward Ever Media, which is a multimedia group that helps organizations use storytelling for social change. In 2012, as creator and executive producer of the Game Changers Project, he led fellows to produce 30 micro-documentary films for 30 nonprofits across the country that advocate for black men and boys. Jay Sean, who doesn't want us to use his last name, was born and raised in Oakland. He's 16 years old, and he attends Gateway to College High School. He's a member of the East Bay Asian Youth Center, or EBASI, in Oakland. And you all went to see the film together, right? Welcome. Welcome to all of you guys.
Thank you.
So I'll give out the number in just a minute to invite our audience to join this conversation. But let me just go around and get your initial reactions to the film. And what were you expecting and what surprised you? Who wants to start?
Well, I'll start.
Chris.
First of all, I want to say I'm really glad to be here because I saw it in a packed audience on Saturday with my fiance, and it was a mixed audience.
Yeah.
And everyone was really moved. I mean, I think even if this hadn't been Ryan's first feature film,
that's the filmmaker Ryan Coogler.
It's an amazing accomplishment in the way that it does something that, as you were implying, really needs to be done, and that is it fills the gap between the sort of strident voices that often come from hip hop on the one hand, and the kind of predictable voices that come from, you know, political leaders on the other. I mean, and it does that by really creating an opportunity for us to feel the humanity of this person. And of course, that humanity exists in all black men. But this actualizes that in a way that people can really feel it. And I was really impressed and very moved.
Yeah, and it starts with these bookends, right? That cell phone video that we've all seen of the killing, and really challenges us to feel differently about what we're seeing at the beginning and then at the end. What was your reaction, Cheo?
You know, Holly, I saw the film at Sundance in January.
Oh, you did?
Right?
Wow.
And was blown away. You know, was in a screening there with the filmmaker, with Ryan, and actually Forrest Whitaker and some other folks. Very moving then. And then saw it again on the opening a couple weeks ago, I guess Friday the 12th here.
At the Grand Lake.
At the Grand Lake in Oakland. And I guess just for me, it's so powerful because we talk about now, everybody says, I am Trayvon. You know, we all represent black males, all of us, kind of not just, you know, not just along race, but look at this issue from a humanity standpoint and say, this is a real injustice, you know. And this film was really about a multi-layered portrait of an African-American male, a young man who was trying to do the best he could, you know, as a father. But there, you know, it wasn't just one broad stroke. You saw the complexity, you saw the contradictions, and you saw really in the end what was just a tragic incident. And so, you know, as a father of a 5-year-old daughter myself, I saw myself in that. You know, as somebody who has been that young and has been profiled, I saw myself in him, in his story. But I think it goes, again, it goes beyond just kind of race and gender and class. I think when an injustice is portrayed on screen, we all relate to it.
But I think that the thing that maybe is different about this film, this dramatization, the fact that it's a film as opposed to a documentary, is that a lot of the conversations I've had this week with my Black friends, they can all relate to Oscar Grant in a way that I think that a lot of people in the general public who are not African American could not. And the movie sort of challenges everybody to walk in those shoes.
That's right. I mean, and that's, I think that's at its core the work of the Game Changers Project. What we are focused on is reframing the narrative about Black men and boys in, you know, in this country, and to create opportunities for Black filmmakers to go out and tell their stories as they see them, and to embed the media with this new narrative, to create this new infrastructure, a digital infrastructure, so these stories can be out there. And the thing, again, that was for me really striking is that what we've encountered is that there's an implicit bias. Chris knows about this in the work that he does. There's this an implicit bias. There's that we're all wired for that. So whether you see a pit bull or you see a certain kind of car or you see anything, images come to us and we completely have our minds made up automatically. And I think for Black males, because of our painful history that Obama talked about, that people feel like they already know. You know, I challenge audiences that when we have our film festivals to close their eyes and to imagine a Black male, just think of a Black male in their mind. And if the first image that comes to them, you know, is not a, you know, a loving father, you know, or a husband, or a student who's just trying to get through, or somebody that is struggling on the same levels that they're struggling. If that is not, that's not the first image that they have, if it's some, you know, negative image that we've seen in the media, then we know something's wrong. And I know, you know, the other thing I want to talk about is that because we're focusing on digital stories, the films that the fellows produce are 5-minute micro-documentaries that are embedded on websites and stream on websites and on blogs and through Twitter. And the idea is to kind of kick up this negative algorithm that I see, you know, on Google. Mm-hmm. We saw this with Trayvon. Mm-hmm. You know, so how many people are searching for one kind of image versus another kind of image? And so when you just click in his name on Google under images, you're going to see, you know, maybe him wearing the gold fronts or sticking up the middle finger or any other kinds of negative image. And it just speaks to, I guess, you know, a base desire that's out there to kind of want to be titillated or want to follow that negative as opposed to look at something that's more positive or even just more complex.
And I think that was the interesting thing about this movie, because if you think about the Trayvon Martin case, you know, you can say, well, this is somebody who's completely innocent, right? But with Oscar Grant, he did have a criminal record. All of these things that sometimes can allow you not to identify with this person as a victim.
That's right.
We haven't gotten Jay Sean's reaction to the film, and you're 16 years old.
Oh, yeah.
You are a young Black man. What was it?
No, I don't know. Before we went to go see it, I felt like I wasn't ready for it. Like, you know, we watched it. We went last week, you know, at the Grand Lake. We went, and it kind of hurt me, because I mean, you know, he, you know, it's a lot of people that, you know, I wouldn't say deserve, but they kind of, you know, lead up, you know, make it, you know, they be out there robbing people, you know, doing bad stuff. So you know, it's gonna happen. But I mean, I feel like Oscar Grant, he was a good father. You know, he tried to change his life. He, you know, he tried to get a job. You know, the whole thing. So I feel like it's kind of messed up, because, you know, he didn't really do nothing, and it's cold, because, you know, now his daughter don't have a father, now his girlfriend or whatever, you know, he gone. So I mean, that's pretty messed up. But I know a lot of people, you know, that's gone, you know, but they didn't do stuff that led up to it. But I also know a lot of people that's gone to this day that, you know, was basketball players, that was football players, that went to school every day, that did their thing.
And, you know, who got killed?
And they got killed. So, I mean, it's kind of wrong.
And you said you sort of didn't feel prepared to see the film.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, the way they had the Bart, you know, the guy, the Bart officer, the way he came on the scene was like he was going hard from the gate. Like he was, mm-hmm. And if that's how everything really went, then it's not okay.
You know,
let me quickly give out the number, and then I'll get to you, Chris. Mm-hmm. I just want to invite our audience members. We did invite people to go see this film and join this conversation. The number is 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. What reaction did you have to the film, and what questions did it bring up for you, and what dialogue would you like to have with the folks that are here, with Cheo and Chris and Jay Sean? 866-798-8255 is the toll-free number. And just FYI, we'll also have links to the films that Cheo was talking about and all of this information at yourcallradio.org. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it's clearly a very moving and tragic film. It's easy to come away feeling helpless, asking yourself, like, what could you possibly do? And, of course, you know, on a broadly societal level, all we can do to get sort of to get at the economic and criminal justice issues that really create these conditions, we would have to elect different leaders. You know, that's what we can do collectively. But one of the real accomplishments of this film, I think, as a work of art, is that it offers, and I don't want to give too much away because I think people experiencing it in its own terms is really important, but the film offers lots of opportunities to understand what every individual could do when they encounter those stereotypes that Cher was talking about. Because you'll see characters in the film who are confronted with those fears, and because of the way the film is structured, they open up and they give, in this case, Oscar a chance to interact with them. And that's a challenging moment for both the people who are the recipients of that and for Oscar himself. And the acting and the directing is subtle enough that you can feel that exchange happening. But ultimately, there's an opening. And I think that's something that any person can do when they encounter that fearful stereotype. They can say, I feel that, I understand that, but there's a human being behind that that I can engage with if I give that person a chance. And that's all, I think, people who make films like this and Question Bridge and Cheo's projects want to do, is give people a chance to really deal with the humanity that exists behind every stereotype. And if we do that, then I think every black man they encounter will feel a little bit differently, and it'll subtly change the conditions that that cause these kinds of tragedies to exist.
And I've been having a lot of conversations with people about the stereotypes that we have about each other and how that affects the way that we interact. I mean, it's certainly how it affects the way that young men are often portrayed in media and in the criminal justice system by law enforcement. But one of the things that was interesting to me, even friends who experience racial profiling themselves were talking about having these same feelings sometimes when a young black man is around, just that sense of, you know, maybe there's some fear that I need to experience here. And that somebody can acknowledge that and then deal with it instead of just kind of push it away or just That's have right. that reaction and not acknowledge it. Yeah, Jishan.
No, I just want to say, you know, just like how you said, you know, when people see a black person and they, you know, they do their purse. Like, you know, I could say this from most of the time, people don't sit there and think about, okay, I'm finna rob you or I'm finna hurt you. When you do all that, you put yourself out there. Oh, I got money. When you hold your purse, of course a person gonna be, oh, she probably got, you know, couple hundred dollars, and you know. So I mean, I feel like people shouldn't, and there's nothing to be scared of, you know. You shouldn't be scared. We're all human beings. So I mean, you know, when you put yourself on Front Street and you want to run to your car and lock your doors and you want to grab your purse, and you know, you putting yourself out there like you got something, you know, that.
What was your reaction when you heard President Obama talk about exactly what you're talking about, that, you know, getting into an elevator and having somebody clutch their purse or lock their door?
I read it this morning on the way here, actually, and, I mean, we were talking about it. And, I mean, I feel like, it shouldn't be like that, but, I mean, it's true. You know, I walk around, and, you know, I can go to Berkeley or, you know, wherever, and I walk around, and people see me, they look at me and kind of try to be away, but it's like, it's wrong to me. I mean, it shouldn't be like that, you feel me? If I'm not coming up to you, doing nothing to you, then what are you scared for?
Let me invite, I know there's so much that we want to talk about here. Let me get one of our callers, Rain in Santa Cruz. Welcome to your call. Thanks for calling. Rain, are you there?
Yes, I am. Me?
Yeah.
Can you? Okay, yes. Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you for taking my call. I just, I've been listening to comments about this case, and I'm surprised no one has ever brought this up, which is, the Jewish system in the common law of, the British tradition, to me, as applies a distinct to the civil law or Roman law, it seems that that doesn't really work, because what you have in these cases which attract greater attention from the media, you have a very well-known and influential lawyers who really overpowered the judge and the jury themselves. The jury is instructed in a certain way, and the verdict, sure enough, will come as...
Rain, you're referring to the Zimmerman case, the Zimmerman acquittal?
Yeah. So what happens, you know, these people are called to judge upon a citizen, and they prisoners of this system, they just can't wait to go back home to their regular life. And the verdict has to be unanimous, and if there is one that does not agree, he will eventually agree with everybody else to go home. So it's to me, doesn't work, and nobody has ever questioned that. I wonder why. I don't know.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Rain. Let me put that to Chris and Cheo. In a lot of ways, it's certainly in the Trayvon Martin case and also in the Oscar Grant case, the justice system was, you know, really highlighted in all of its inequality. And in fact, in the Oscar Grant case, it was the reason that the men were pulled out onto the platform was that there was a fight on BART, a pretty vicious fight between blacks and whites. And only black men were pulled off of the train.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there obviously are always going to be criticisms of our criminal justice system when the verdict doesn't turn out the way that there's a consensus for what the justice should have been. And I understand, you know, the frustrations of that. I like the way, you know, President Obama framed it. He said that the laws in that particular municipality were followed and the jury came to consensus. And if we're going to be a society governed by laws, whether we agree with the outcomes or not, we kind of have to peacefully deal with that and go on, even though we know that there's a problem. I was really happy to hear Alan Dershowitz, for example, criticize the prosecutors in this case, because I think, you know, anybody who looked at it closely could see that there were real flaws in the case that they were making. But obviously, the circumstances in Florida with the Stand Your Ground laws, I mean, that basis in law and society needs to be critiqued in order to prevent these kinds of things from happening again.
But it does give us an opening to look at the justice system and the fact that black men are much more likely to be pulled over and searched. Right. David Kennedy of Harvard writes in his book, you know, if you really cared about the war on drugs, you'd go onto college campuses and into dorms and you would bust everybody there because everybody knows that's where drugs are. But that's not what happens in our society.
Holly, I think that, and I listened to President Obama's speech and I feel like it was well spoken. It was nuanced. It was very political, and it was very historical. I was actually proud of some of the things that he said as a black man. But I also feel that there was a film, to me, there was kind of an undertone of saying, yes, we are a nation of laws. We have to, as you know, as Chris says, kind of peacefully agree. I think we should peacefully disagree. I think as black men, when we are born in this country, we are already on trial. I think that as Juror B37 said, you know, Trayvon was responsible for, you know, was her exact quote. Trayvon was, you know, he played a role in his own death.
And I'm just going to clarify for everybody, this is the juror who came out and did an anonymous interview on CNN, I think it was, that, and talked about, yeah.
That's right. You know, and some of the things that she said and has brought out, and you know, we're finding that there possibly may be a mistrial. I've just heard about that, that, you know, that there's an attorney down in Florida who's looking into juror intimidation and looking into kind of what went on during their deliberation, and some of the things that she revealed in that interview with Anderson Cooper. So, you know, I feel that I believe in civil disobedience. I believe in our ability to peacefully demonstrate and protest. And I believe that on this case, as it started, you look at as it started, that Zimmerman was not even arrested until, you know, young people went to the streets and demanded for his arrest, and we had over 2 million
and
people.
Parents.
That's right. Until we had people sign a petition, and so I really feel that the role of our public discourse and social media, all of that's going to, I think it's going to change this whole concept of how cases are tried in this country.
You do.
Yeah, I think because, you know, we've seen...
I'm glad to hear that optimism. Definitely. Because I've heard from a lot of people, well, just that futility of nothing is going to change. Here we go again and again and again.
No, I think that if we are going to be a nation of laws, and if we're going to be a country that says that we the people, then the people have to have a voice, and the people will continue to rise up. If we, you know, and this is an experiment, this country, and we're finding out every day about just the kind of fragility of what we have here. You know, I love this country, but I also feel like that there are some serious contradictions in the way that people are treated, specifically black males. And so I think that all of the work that all of us are doing in showing this new narrative is just going to be so vital.
And do you think that the people who aren't already won over are listening?
The people who aren't already won over.
Right.
I think that. That's a big issue because we have all these different lanes and everybody kind of stays in these lanes. But I think the thing that the Fruitvale film did so well is that it approached it from it was all about the human heart. You know, you see this character in the beginning, and this is just a part of the strong structure of the script and the work that Ryan did. You see him save a dog or pick up a dog. I mean, so you have sympathy.
Although that's one of the pieces of the film that a lot of people have criticized as either being heavy-handed or it didn't belong there.
Right, but with a black male character, with certain people who are not going to come over to our side or even to see that, you know, I think that that was necessary. I think that the texts and the calls between him and his mother and his grandmother, and you know, bringing in these other characters, that for me is what made the film reach all the audiences.
That's right. See, what we're doing is we're talking about the role of an artist to shape a story, to shift human consciousness, and that's what we're all doing. That's what Question Bridge attempts to do, and that is take the experience of a person from the street and then change it through an encounter with our work.
And that's Chris Johnson. He's the creator of Question Bridge Black Males, which is a video installation project at the Exploratorium. We're also speaking with Jay Sean, who's 16 years old and attends Gateway to College in Oakland, and Cheo Taylor, who's founder and executive producer of the Game Changers Project. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
Your call on local public radio. We invite you to join in today's conversation. Here's the number, 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's show.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan. This is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about workers and unions. How should workers and unions communicate with the public, especially the younger generation, about actions and strikes? Would it help them to be more successful in getting their side of the story across? And today, does knowing who the man Oscar Grant was change how you view his death? The film Fruitvale Station is now out in theaters, and it tells the story of Oscar Grant's last day, and it depicts the violence on the BART platform that led to his death. Does it capture a truth you hadn't previously understood about this person and about that event? What does the story of Oscar Grant's life and death tell us about the realities of police, violence, and young men of color? You can join our conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, and links to our guests and all of the information that you're hearing are at yourcallradio.org. We're speaking with Cheo Taylor, who's founder and executive producer of the Game Changers Project, Chris Johnson, who's one of the creators of Question Bridge, Black Males, and Jay Sean, who's a 16-year-old who attends Gateway to College High School in Oakland. You know, you were talking, Cheo, right before the break about the power of art, and you were saying this, Chris, to really kind of transcend some of these stereotypes and help provoke us to think differently. So let's hear a clip from Octavia Spencer, who played Oscar Grant's mother in the movie Fruitvale Station. She played Wanda Johnson, and she talks here about why she decided to act on film. Do we have her? I'm not hearing it, guys. We're not playing it. Is that accurate? Okay.
We spend so much time trying to vilify these young men, and yet, you know, when you have, you know, kids who go into schools and shoot up schools, you know, we learn every single solitary thing about their lives. You know, we learn he was the president of the debate team, and, you know, all of these different attributes, and it's all to be evocative of empathy. But we can't really do that when it comes to young men of color, and we have to examine that. Once we can start to empathize with people that we think are different from ourselves, we will see them as human beings. And when we see them as human beings, I think these incidents will less likely occur. So to take on the role of Wanda Johnson, it's the biggest role I've ever played. And I do have a responsibility, because once the lights go out and this movie goes to, you know, whatever it's going to do, this woman and her family have to continue to exist. Michael and I, we all felt the gravity of the situation and understood what it meant for this woman to grieve so publicly and then to have her son raked through the mud. You know, all of these different things, we understood. That's why we are here, and that's why we are presenting this movie, so that we can have these conversations.
And that is Octavia Spencer speaking about her portrayal of Wanda Johnson, the mother of Oscar Grant, in the movie Fruitvale Station, which is what we're discussing here on Your Call. And it was really moving and discouraging in some ways to hear her talking about the fact that we as a society, the larger society, frequently do not have empathy for young black men, that we have these stereotypes that are perpetrated through the media, mainstream media, and just in our common perceptions. Why are our perceptions so skewed that it takes this for us to view Oscar Grant as a man instead of...
Well, you know, I think part of that is that it's really hard to have empathy for a stereotype.
Right.
Okay. A stereotype is just by its very definition, it's an image. What you have empathy for is a life, is a person. And so that's why the kinds of things that Cheo and I are doing with our work is to try to take those stereotypes and peel them back and show that behind every single one of them is a living human being with a full life. And I think that's the achievement of this film. It takes one day, which could have been an inconsequential day for this family, and it shows how it set a condition that led to this tragedy. And just by looking I wouldn't say impartially, you know. I mean, the director doesn't take a position in a really dogmatic way about what happens. It simply tells a clear human story, and I think that's what makes it so moving.
Is that it is so complex. And we have a question for Jay Sean. As a young black man in Oakland, having seen Fruitvale Station and considering the Trayvon Martin case, how does this make you reflect on your own experience living in Oakland?
I mean, overall, I feel like, you know, it's a lot of stuff that going in Oakland. So, I mean, you know, people die every day. So, I mean, you know, looking at something like Trayvon Martin or Oscar Grant, really, you feel like, I don't really feel anything because, if I told you that I really, you know, care about the whole situation, I'd be lying. Only because I know so many people that, like I said, I know so many people that's dead that never got justice. I got a friend named Malik. The person who killed him was his best friend, and they let him walk away free. So, I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's nothing to me. Like, I look at stuff like that, and I just be like, that's their problem. That's nothing to do with me, but I mean...
But you are dealing with this public health epidemic of violence and murder that is plaguing places like East Oakland.
And I feel like now that it's been going on for so long, I feel like it's normal now. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, the best way for you to get out of it is to leave, to do something else, to go, you know, go out the way and go to school, get a job or, you know, do something. That's the only way that I feel like you can get out, because other than that, it's normal. You know, if you sit there and live in Oakland, then you're gonna see people. You're gonna see crackheads. You're gonna see every day. You're gonna hear gunshots. You're gonna high speed chase. It's the whole nine. So I feel like, and it's not a good thing that I feel like is normal. It's not. But it being going, I didn't seen it. You know, for so many years, I didn't. You know, it's normal. Somebody tell me, oh, somebody got shot last night. Well, it happens every night. You know, and it's wrong, but I mean, you know.
So, listening to this, Chaya, what's going through your head?
I mean, I understand. I relate to it. I mean, I lived in West Oakland, you know, high crime rate, not far from housing projects, you know, where folks are doing home invasions and there's cats selling drugs on the corner and, you know, taking over houses and, you know, shooting up cars. And you know, I can't send the kids out to dump the trash. And so... You know, what do I do? And I work in this. This is the work I do. I need to stay alive to do the work. And so, you know, I have to move maybe a couple miles. I change my zip code. And by changing my zip code, all of a sudden my health expectancy and like how long I'm going to live, all these kind of health disparities that exist in these areas that are undeveloped, where poverty and miseducation and all these issues continue to.
And lack of and jobs
lack
and
of
industry
jobs. So
and
all of
businesses.
All of these protracted social issues that continue to devastate black and brown communities are not something that we can just deal with one clean, you know, sweep. I was listening to Meet the Press just last week, and they were talking to a roundup of black folks, so-called leaders or leaders, you know, folks that they had called to talk about the president's speech. And one of the things that came out of it was that there's no federal program really right now to address kind of black male issues are, you know, African-American poverty in one kind of way, like there is for, like, maybe the LGBT community around, like, don't ask, don't tell, or same-sex marriage, or even around the immigrant issue with the DREAM Act. There's kind of no legislation or federal policy that we can deal with this. So as opposed to just saying, let's have this conversation, which is why I think President Obama came and was saying, well, this is kind of what we can do, but... You know, we also have to push him. We have, you know, all the people who believe in justice, regardless of, you know, their background, have to push these folks, our elected officials, to not only have this conversation, but to create legislation that's going to actually help. And we do have poverty programs and we have these other things. But
they're not working.
But they're
and
not
it's
working.
It's like we've abandoned an entire parts of our cities to this kind of dire intergenerational poverty and rampant violence that Deshaun was talking about. And I think it's outrageous.
Absolutely. You know,
Deshaun wanted to say something.
I just wanted to add this also, like how you were saying people, you know, the home invasions and stuff. At the same time, I think everybody should realize that sometimes people got to do what they got to do. Sometimes people like what other people think probably is just what we wake up, you know, wake up and just be ready to go do whatever. You know, sometimes it's not like
that.
Like I know a lot of people that just like stereotype black young people and just be like, oh well, they're on probation. They always sell drugs, or they, you know, if they got a nice car, they sell drugs. They can't have a job, or you know, stuff like that. And I feel like, you know, it shouldn't be like that, because sometimes it be situations to where you have to do what you got to do. You got to put food in your stomach. You know, you got to, you know, put a roof over your head, and some you're going to do with anything. You're going to do whatever in order for you to have what you need. So I feel like people shouldn't really look at it as, oh, we're just bad people. We're just, you know, they need to think about it as, you know, this is all we know. This is all we got. And then this is it.
Jay Sean is pulling. I just want to get this kind of response. I mean, his statement is illuminating what I've dealt with as a mentor for the last 15 plus years, is that when we work with young folks in the community, there's folks that I call the will knows and the won't knows.
Will know and won't know.
Right. And that's their mindset. And they're folks that you can reach out to and you can help. And they're at a point in their journey where they're receptive. They will know about what you're offering to them. There's other folks that I call won't knows, because they're too deeply entrenched in just trying to meet their needs. You know, Maslow's, there's the, you know, housing and food, shelter, you know, belongingness. They just want to get that, and they need to do whatever they can to get that.
And you feel like you can't reach them?
No, I'm not saying I can't reach them. I'm saying we have ways to reach them. We've had many breakthroughs and have many success stories with reaching them. But there's more of us that are needed. And so in Oakland, there's you know, there's a mentoring center, there's Youth Uprising, there's Leadership Excellence, there's lots of organizations that are out there. There's the Brotherhood of Elders, which is a phenomenal intergenerational group of African-American men from 18 to 80 who are doing this kind of work. David Muhammad is a part of that group. Mm-hmm. So we're doing this work, but the work, again, needs to be seeded and kind of brought to scale, and the media is all a part of that.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of callers on the line, so try and be brief if you would, Chris. I know that there's so much to say here.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's important to say that there's an irony. I've worked in the prison system, and inside of those systems, there are real reformers working. Like, there's the RSVP program, there's Man Up. I mean, there's a lot going on inside of that incarceration system, and a lot of those men feel as if they get more care and attention incarcerated than they do when they hit the streets.
Absolutely. Can get a college education in San Quentin that you couldn't get outside. I've talked to a lot of men who feel that way, and also feel like they have a lot of wisdom and mentorship to offer young people, frankly. There's a moment in the Fruitvale Station movie that kind of illustrates what you're talking about, where it's a flashback to when Oscar Grant was in prison in San Quentin, and he's behaving like a total jerk toward his mom, and you can just see this rash rage that is going to get him nowhere except into administrative segregation. And it seems like it was one of those moments where he was unreachable.
Yeah, that was a complex moment. I mean, if you look at the faces of both his mother and Oscar in that moment, you can see that on the one hand, he's feeling pent-up anger and frustration. She's feeling blamed and guilty. I mean, so it's not a simple dynamic. I mean, the reason why he erupted had a lot to do with feeling rejected at that particular
and
moment.
And that whole alienation that does get people to drop out of the system.
That's right.
Let me go to callers, because we have so many people who want to join this conversation. Let's go first to Joseph in Berkeley. Hi, Joseph.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Before my point, I just want to interject that Martin Luther King said that the war on poverty was not even a decent skirmish. And at the time, many white political interests even fought tooth and nail against that. So with regard to what I want to say, I just want to make two quick points before my question. First of all, we have a president who over 4.5 years ago excoriated one Reverend Jeremiah Wright. And when the president said that racism was over and that Reverend Wright was living in the past, and the kind of racism Reverend Wright was talking about no longer exists. So I just want to make that clear about our president, about our first black president. My second point is, you had a racist caller call in on this past Wednesday, July the 17th, and tried to justify all these shootings by saying let's face it, black people commit most of the crimes in the U.S., and that is annually refuted by FBI statistics alone. The majority of crime in America is not committed by African Americans, the FBI statistics show, and the majority of African Americans do not commit crime. So that's a long-held stereotype by many white people, like that racist caller, that they can find out documentation is false. There's a very good article online called "Why Y'all to Those Who Ask Why Y'all Don't Protest When Black Folks Kill Black Folks." Another thing the racist caller asserted, they should read that article because it shows that for the past 30, 40 years, probably more, there have been black community efforts, including in rap music, against so-called black-on-black crime. My question for your guest is, you know, I've mentioned something that a lot of black people actually have not taken seriously, and that is these black filmmakers who get paid by Hollywood and PBS to stereotype black people. In particular, I wrote an article called PBS Documentary on Hip-Hop Neglects the Role of White Corporate Media and Blames Blacks, about Byron Hurt's documentary, Hip-Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes.
Joseph, do you mind getting to your question, just because I have so many callers I'm trying to get to? Yeah.
Okay, so
what's the question?
I'll wrap up in 1 or 2 seconds.
Thank you.
Which stereotypes black males in rap music. And then we had the movie Precious, which Ishmael Reed wrote about, which was stereotypes on steroids. So I'm wondering what your guests have to say about black people in the film industry who get paid to stereotype black people and say once again that black males ain't no good.
Okay, let's go to Cheo, because this is specifically what you do.
So I would say that I agree that there are far too many African-American filmmakers, black male or female, who definitely are kind of regurgitating the negative stereotypes and are producing films that are definitely devastating and hurtful to our people. I'm not going to name names, but I think that the issue that we're doing, that we're taking up, is saying, like, we are using the model of activist storytellers. Our filmmakers are not just filmmakers for the sake of art. They're filmmakers who are connected to social justice. And so just in that realm, that, you know, the whole model is a totally different model. And we're not engaged with Hollywood. We're putting our films out in a whole different way. Hollywood is a dinosaur right now. We're looking, I might get in trouble for saying that, but, you know, there's a marriage that's already happened between Hollywood and Silicon Valley. And right now, there's a different model that we're using.
Well, and there's all kinds of garbage put out by Hollywood.
That's right.
That stereotypes just about every kind of person in the universe. So
sure.
Let's go to Ashe in Felton. Hi, Ashe.
Hi. Good morning, people. I'm just going to share something that helps me. It was very good to hear from one of the gentlemen there about the 18 to 80-year-old black men organizing to help the youth. That is also an idea that is I wish we could spread around the whole country for the elders to help the youth. But after the Trayvon Martin thing, I just sat down at the computer and just wrote a quick list, and it ended up being like 11 names. The first page is Michael Stewart, 1983. These first five names, Philip Pinel, Sean Bell, Amadou Diallo, Abner Louima, all shot, killed by cops with at least their hands raised, not doing anything. The next page, James Byrd, dragged by a truck in Jasper, Texas. I had no idea, found it on the computer. Brandon McKellen, dragged to death beneath a truck, also in Paris, Texas, September 16th, 2008. It's like there is a disease in this country, is my point. It really helps me. It's tragic. Also, Angelo Freeland, shot by cops. Oscar Grant, shot by cops. Emmett Till. You look up lynching on the internet and you find a lot of stuff that's really horrific.
So the sense, Ashe, that this is happening again and again and again.
No, the point is that we must, it helps those who, them that know, it helps us to keep a consciousness that we are under fire. This is a system that is bigger than oh, I'm going to shoot this guy because he has drugs and I can make some money. This, it's like it may take the I don't know people and raise their consciousness, because we're at war. This is a concerted effort over the last 100 years at least to keep African Americans, men and women, down and controlled, and take the power of the African man and subjugate him. And if we all begin to come together with that consciousness, that consciousness will make us stronger, I believe.
Let's get a response. Go ahead, Chris, and then let's hear from Jayshon.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's obviously expressing something that we all feel, but there are reasons for this. I want to recommend another film, a film done by Sam Pollard called Slavery by Another Name, which begins to sort of lay out, you can see it on PBS, because, you know, we're very familiar with the idea of black men as criminals, and what this film deconstructs is the fact that the criminal justice system in the South was distorted by the South that wanted to industrialize and warped its penal system in order to bring black men into essentially a kind of slavery. So she's right. This is a collective, broad historical problem, but we're faced with that now, and we have to decide what we're going to do. That's why artists are looking for alternative to the Hollywood-based voices, and that's what Question Bridge attempts to do. It's only the voices of black men, offering not only questions that come from black male consciousness, but answers to those questions.
Yeah, it's a really powerful exhibit. It's at the Exploratorium right now. I want to get to this, what do we do? You talked about Protest Chao, but let me read a couple of emails very quickly. Armand in San Francisco says, I'm a 73-year-old white male who's been watching this slaughter for a very long time, and it's almost always the same. It's a template. A cop who is armed to the teeth with two guns, spray, and a baton says they feel threatened by an unarmed man who is just there doing nothing or maybe exhibiting psychotic behavior and desperately needs help. I don't ever expect this to end because it's a conscious plan. You should interview a black cop and get their point of view, but that may not be possible due to the cop's code of never outing a bad racist cop. We actually did interview an Oakland officer who talked very candidly about the fact that sometimes even black officers feel this sense of profiling, because it's kind of this portrayal of a neighborhood as a militarized zone. So Armand says, I get nervous around cops because I feel I don't know if they're looking for a scapegoat or for something they can't solve. What I found, and then Monica writes, what I found most valuable about Fruitvale Station is that it shows the humanity of people living in Oakland. The film showed neighborhoods with well-kept houses. One scene showed a man pushing a stroller. It showed people participating as family and community. What we usually get from the media about Oakland is a city under siege with the bullets flying. And while this may be the reality in some neighborhoods, it's not the only reality. So let's get a response to those and really move this into the direction of, I think President Obama said, where do we go from here? And where do we go from here? Let's start with you, Jason.
No, I just want to, I like the fact how she said in the movie how they had, like, people pushing strollers, like they tried to give a good outlook, you know, Oakland. And actually, I mean, Oakland isn't just, you know, violence. People just don't, you know, it's not just that. It's a lot of nice people in Oakland. There's a lot of, you know, people. It's a lot of good people in Oakland. It's not like, you know, Oakland is just, oh, this war zone. You go there, you're going to die. You're never going to. No, it's not even like that, because it's great people there. It's, you know, it's fun.
And
Go ahead, Chris, and then Jay.
I mean, as an artist who does public art projects, I thought that a really interesting project would be, I call it the best way to find a hero, and that would be to take a map of Oakland and just throw a dart at it and go to wherever that dart went. And what you would find is a hero, because you'd find some grandmother who's taking care of her family and her kids, and that's the odds of what you would happen.
Because that, you know, most people are out there just doing the right thing every day.
That's right. I love living in Oakland.
I do, too. And I think that's the thing that, I mean, I mentioned West Oakland last time. And I want to, you know, in radio, there's just these little short kind of sound bites. I love West Oakland. I live in the Lower Bottoms. And it's a historic black community. And there's everything there. So, yes, there was, you know, there was some challenges with drugs and whatever. But there was, you know, there's the image of the 18-year-old black boy with the pants sagging and the, you know, the Timberland boots and the hoodie pushing a stroller with his girlfriend, you know, or somebody going to you know, catch Bart to go to work. So, and these are the kind of resiliency stories that we work with and try to, you know, lift up with Game Changers. And so I do think that in terms of, like, solutions and what's next, for us, you know, in Oakland, I mentioned this Brotherhood of Elders, this Brotherhood Network. We're going to be having a community town hall meeting on this whole Trayvon incident and kind of where we go next. Actually, it's going to be this Friday coming up in Oakland.
We'll put a link to all of that information
at
yourcallradio.org. Just quick 30 seconds. We don't have much time left. What's your takeaway from Fruitvale Station?
Well, again, what I would do is ask every person who sees it to walk out on the street, look at themselves, and when they see the next black young man, question their own motivations, and consider the opportunity to really open yourself to a real human encounter with that person, if that's available. I think that would change at least one person.
I would say that we could, every person also should look at the film and look at the complexities of what it really means to be black and male in America, looking at all the contradictions and the struggles, you know, and what it really takes to get just, some people may, you know, there's many things that other people take for granted, and to walk into, you know, walk in our shoes for that time, even if it's just for 2 hours during that film,
and
to see what it's about.
Really quickly, Jay Sean, because we're almost out of time.
Yeah, Before anybody makes a statement about it, I feel like you should put yourself in that whole situation. After you see the movie, put yourself in that whole situation and then say what you got to say.
Walk in the shoes of somebody else. And I'm sorry that we have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Jay Sean, who's a 16-year-old who attends Gateway to College High School in Oakland. We've also been joined by Cheo Taylor, who's founder and executive producer of the Game Changers Project, and Chris Johnson, who's creator of Question Bridge Black Males, which is a video installation project at the Exploratorium right now. I highly recommend it. He's also a professor of photography at the California College of the Arts. All of that information will be at yourcallradio.org. You can post more information there if you have additional resources for us. I'm sorry we couldn't get to more emails and phone calls. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. How should workers and unions communicate with the public about actions and strikes? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about the divide between organized labor and the public. The recent Bay Area Rapid Transit workers' strike failed to win widespread support from commuters. What might bridge the gap between the unions and the public? What do unions need to be telling people? And what do you think about workers organizing and striking? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. We'll